Morning. Today's daf in Shabbos Pei Beis. We're on Pei Beis Amud Aleph. We are towards the top of the Amud, starting at the two dots, three lines from the top of the page. Amalei Rav Huna LeRabba Berei. So a dialogue which we're about to engage in, but before we start with the Gemara, let's just quickly give ourselves some background. We're finishing today the eighth parak of the Masechta. Eighth parak of Masechta dedicated to one singular topic, and that is Shiurim. Amounts that a person would be chayv if he carried a particular object through a Rishus HaRabim, four amos in Rishus HaRabim, alternatively, carrying from a Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim, or from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYachid. Otherwise stated, violating the Malacha of Hotza'ah. Malacha of Hotza'ah requires a carrying, requires a Kira Hanacha, it requires carrying an object of significance. An object of significance needs a significant amount. And so, in this eighth parak, which began on Ayin Vav Amud Beis and concludes today on Pei Beis, so goes over the amount of each item depending on what that item is and considering what exactly is the point of Chashivus. That has been our parak and that will continue to be our discussion all the way to the last mission, which we're going to be seeing in just a couple of minutes from now. That means that later this morning we're going to be starting the ninth parak of the Masechta, and when we get there I'll introduce the ninth parak of the Masechta. With that stated, so yesterday we are coming off of a Mishnah on Pei Aleph Amud Aleph, where the Mishnah there informs us the amounts that one would be chai for carrying things like stones, glass, and bones. We spent a lot of time by stones because back in the day, the way that you finish going to the bathroom and wiping yourself is with stones. In fact, later this morning we're going to talk about the fact that as a general rule, one should not use flammable materials to wipe yourself with, which obviously is going to invoke a question, what are we doing using toilet paper? Later on, I'll discuss that just so briefly. But in the meantime, however, you're not allowed to use that. You have to use things which are flame resistant. And so therefore, you use stones. They used stones back in the day. And so that engendered a lot of discussion regarding the stones themselves that are used vis-a-vis Shabbos, vis-a-vis general health considerations, and that gets us to today. Now, if you think that yesterday we had a lot of bathroom talk, that's true. If you're wondering why exactly the Gemara is spending so much time discussing it, so we will get an unbelievable perspective as we begin this morning's daf. And with that stated, we're going to begin. Amalei Rav Huna LeRabba Berei. Rav Huna says to Rabba, his son, my time lo shchicha kamed Rav Chista, dema chad shvaitata. I highly recommend that you learn together with Rav Chista. He's very sharp, and I'm not understanding why exactly you're not spending more time learning with Rav Chista. So Amalei, so the son tries to explain to his father, my ezol legabe. You're suggesting that I spend more time with him. Dechiazin legabe. Listen, I tried his shir, and I try learning from him, and most of late, b'mili d'alma. And what he's talking about are general topics. He's not talking Torah with me. Amalei mandai labesek, he's saying, he gives examples of things that he heard from Rav Chista in the past. Anyone who goes to the bathroom, lalese beheja, shouldn't sit down right away. But in other words, but take your time to go sit down on the seat. V'lo litrach tvei. And also, don't exert yourself. Don't overexert yourself. Dehai karkasha atlashina yasiv. Because the karkasha is sitting on three teeth. Now, obviously, the Gemara over here is giving some sort of anatomical description of the rectal area. I did a little bit of research yesterday. I consulted with a couple of friends of mine who specify in this particular area of the body. And so possibly the Gemara over here, when it talks about the teeth that are in the rectal area, so it could be that the Gemara here is talking about hemorrhoids. We all have them all the time. When we say that the person's suffering from hemorrhoids, it means that the hemorrhoids are inflamed or engorged. But they're there, and there are three of them. So possibly that's what the Gemara here is making reference to. Anyway, but it's they are either the hemorrhoids or there could be some sort of connective tissue. Whatever the case may be. So what Rav Chista now has explained to Rabbi in the past is that if you overexert yourself, there are going to be three glands that are over there, and Dilma Mishtamshta Shinui Dikarakashta. And what's going to happen is if you overexert yourself, so literally the Gemara means to say that they're going to fall out, Vasali De Sakana, and that would be very dangerous. So these are the kinds of things that I'm hearing from Rav Chista, and And so Rabbi says to his father, and what do you want me to do now? You want me to go back there and listen? I don't feel like we're learning Torah. So Amrlei, so the father says back to his son, who asik bechai debriyasa? The atamar bemiladama? He's dealing with health issues. He's telling you how to live a healthier life. And you call that miladama, you call that general knowledge? You for sure should go to him. Meaning not only is he teaching you Torah, but he's teaching you how to be healthy as well. And it's a no-brainer that you should go to him. Now, the Gemara could be understood in one of two ways. The simplest way to understand the Gemara is that he's interested in teaching you Torah, and he's interested in your health as well. And you should go to him because he cares not only about teaching you Torah, he cares about you. That's the simplest way to read the Gemara. And then you could also suggest that what the Gemara means over here is that by teaching you how to live healthy, that's also part and parcel of Torah. Part and parcel of Torah is to lead a healthy lifestyle. And if he's telling you how to lead a healthy lifestyle, that's incorporated within the Torah itself. Okay, either way, Chista says this is important stuff. When all said and done, that's what the Gemara is boiling it down to. This is really important stuff. So important that it takes our precious real estate from our Gemara. We spent half a day discussing it yesterday. We're going to spend half a day discussing it today. So obviously, if it's taking up this precious real estate, it's very important. And Rav Chista now is just simply communicating this idea to us in the form that Rav Chista was saying it in Shir, but Rav Huna now is communicating it to his son. And obviously, with the Gemara telling over the story to us, it's because the Gemara wants to communicate to us as well. All this is really important. So the Gemara says, "How you lefan of sorah becheres." The Gemara continues. The Gemara says, "Now let's say you have the following options in terms of wiping, and that is you have sorah becheres. You have a stone and you have earthenware. And of the two, which would be preferable?" And the Gemara has a debate on this very issue. Rav Huna Amar mekanech b'tzorah ve'ein mekanech becheres, and Rav Chista Amar mekanech becheres ve'ein mekanech b'tzorah. So a debate in terms of which of the two are preferable. Rav Huna says the stone would be preferable, and Rav Chista would say that the earthenware would be preferable. It's funny that the Gemara brings this debate on the heels of Rav Huna saying to his son, "You should be learning by Rav Chista." And meanwhile, in some of these details, in terms of proper bathroom, not only etiquette, but halacha, so Rav Huna and Rav Chista are debating. So it's funny that Rav Huna knows that he's not in agreement with Rav Chista on all these items, but still, obviously Rav Chista is still an Adam Gadol, and he's telling his son to go learn by Rav Chista. Anyway, what is the issue is over here? What exactly is the debate? The Gemara just gives no explanation behind why it is that they're arguing. And on top of that, we could also ask the obvious question over here. Are they debating because it's a Shabbos consideration? Or are they debating in general because this is a general health debate in terms of which one is going to be safer to use for wiping? That also is not clear in the Gemara. And so, truth of the matter is that the Gemara only gives us the construct of the debate, but no explanation behind it. Let's present Rashi. Rashi over here, let's take a look at the Rashi. Eino mekanech ba'asavim. Rashi writes that Rashi is on the next debate. Rashi mekanech b'tzur. Thank you. Okay. Rashi mekanech b'tzur. Rashi writes b'shabbos. Afa pidla bartiltahu ba'alma. The eino mekanech becheres mishum sakana. So Rashi simply says, first in this Rashi, he says that the issue over here is specific to Shabbos, and stones are going to be a problem because of the muksa concern. However, as long as we discussed yesterday, as long as you designate the stone to be used, so then there it's no longer going to be muksa, and it's better, even though stones have it with it a muksa consideration, it's better than cheres. Look at the next Rashi. Because cheres presents a sakana. Cheres has with it a certain danger. We learned at the end of yesterday's daf that you use cheres, so it makes you more vulnerable to sorcery and witchcraft. That's what we learned at the end of yesterday's daf. Okay, so that explains the position of stone over cheres. What about the other direction? Why cheres as opposed to stone? So working within the Rashi, so it could very well be that cheres is less of an issue because it's less of a muksa concern than stones. Stones are more of a muksa consideration. Okay, that could be the machlokas here between Rav Huna and Rav Chista, and that's the way that Rashi presents it. Maybe we go back to the Gemara. We're challenging based on a brisa. The Braisa reads, Ha'ilafanav Tzor V'cheres. The Braisa spells it out. That if you have in front of you either stone or earthenware, which should you wipe with? Mekanech v'cheres, vein mekanech b'tzor. So you should wipe with earthenware and not with the stone. So Tiyufta de Rav Huna, this Braisa goes directly against the position of Rav Huna. So Tirgum Rav from Bar Papa, Kameh de Rav Chista, Aliba de Rav Huna. So now Rav from Bar Papa tries to defend the position of Rav Huna, and he says, Be'ugne Kalim. Over there, the Braisa does favor the Cheres, but only when the Cheres has a smooth edge. So when it has a smooth edge, so only under those circumstances, a Kli Cheres is going to be preferable. But under normal circumstances, a stone is going to be preferable than the Kli Cheres. Okay, so that could be the a defense of Rav Huna's position. Okay, so issue number one is if the choice is wiping between wiping either with stone or with earthenware, a debate amongst the Amoraim, which one would be preferable, and the way Rashi sets it up, it's a Shabbos issue. Next issue, you'll find a story about Savim. You have in front of you either stone or grass to wipe yourself with. So Rav Chisda, Rav Hamnun, Chanamar Mekanech B'tzor, Vein Mekanech B'Savim, V'Chanamar Mekanech B'Savim, V'Ein Mekanech B'Tzor. Here too becomes a debate. We know who the principals are in the debate, Rav Chisda, Rav Hamnuna. We don't know which one says which, but basically it's a question of which one do we favor. Here too, so Rashi goes on to explain what's behind the debate. Again, the Gemara itself does not explain what the issues are. The Gemara just simply presents the debate. Rashi says, Ein mekanech ba'asavim, she'asavim lachim v'chotchim et ha'basar. So Rashi says that the grass is very moist, and what's going to do is it's going to tear into the flesh. Now this part of Rashi is interesting because clearly Rashi over here is explaining that the debate over here is not a Shabbos issue, it's a question of health issue. Meaning that grass is cutting into you, and obviously that is dangerous, and you'd be injuring yourself, and the way Rashi first presents it, it is a general issue. Okay, it's a little bit challenging because Rashi, when presenting the first question of stone versus earthenware, Rashi presents it as a Shabbos issue, and now the Gemara is transitioning into a general health issue. Okay, that's a shift of topic without the Gemara giving us any headline that this is going to happen. But then Rashi quotes his Rebbein, and Rashi continues. I'm going to read the Rashi. V'Rabbeinu Mefarshim Mishum Talisha. So Rashi quotes his Rebbein saying that the issue is Tolesh. Mahu. Now, I don't fully understand what my Rebbein were talking about, says Rashi. What does that mean? Tolesh? Tolesh is when you're tearing something from the ground. So Rashi says, wait one second. If the issue is Tolesh, that means that the grass that you're using to wipe is still connected to the ground. Well, who would permit that? But then Rashi reconsiders. And Rashi says, So Rashi says, okay, it's a little bit graphic, but basically what you're doing is it's a long reed and it's connected to the ground and you're using it to wipe yourself. And so and even though obviously there are two issues over here. Number one, again, the muksa consideration. It's muksa machmas iser. In other words, you're not allowed to tear it up from the ground. And by tearing it up from the ground, that would be a violation of Chilul Shabbos. So it is usur to make usage of it. And then on top of that, there's of course the fact that if you actually do tear from the ground, so then it would be tolesh. So the reason why the stone would be favored over the asev, the stone would be favored over the grass, is because by the grass you run the risk of talisha. What's the other side? So the next Rashi, ve'inu mekanech b'tzor de la bar tiltuhu, hilkach mekanech ba'asavim kishem emechubar v'lo yizizein. So Rashi says that on the other hand, the grass, Rashi over here is maintaining that this is a Shabbos issue, right? This Rashi. Using the grass is better than a stone because a grass is less muksa than the actual stone. The grass does not require that you are going to be moving the grass. It's a little bit hard to imagine how that's so. And quite frankly, I don't want to think about it too much. But Rashi says you are not moving the grass nearly as much as you're moving the stone. And as far as making use of a tree on Shabbos and on Yantav, so a tree itself you're not allowed to use on Shabbos or on Yantav. Hishamshus be'ilan is asur midrabbanan. But this is not a tree, says Rashi. This is it's a reed. It's a blade of grass, a long blade of grass. So it doesn't fall under the general ban of not using trees on Shabbos. Okay, so the usages of a long blade of grass is going to be less halakhically problematic than that of using a stone. So says Rashi in terms of why the grass would be better than the stone. So again, if the choices are grass and stone, a debate amongst the Amorayim and Mesve. We're back to the Gemara. Hamakanech b'davar shaor shalatos bo shinav tachta bo shinav tachtonos no shros. A person who wipes himself with something which is flammable. So what's going to happen is that either the hemorrhoids or the connective tissues are going to fall out. And so the Bryce over here says very clearly that you should not use something flammable. Now a stone is not flammable. A blade of grass is flammable. And so the Bryce over here certainly is promoting a stone over a blade of grass. So the Gemara's response, Lokasha Hablach and Abiyavation. So the Gemara says, no, if we're talking about a moist blade of grass, and going back to the Rashi, certainly if we're talking about where the blade of grass is connected to the ground, so it's going to be moist and it's really not going to be that flammable, so then that would be okay. Habiyavation, but if we're talking about a dry blade of grass, which is in fact flammable, so then it would be prohibited, and that would be a way of balancing the brice that we just learned and the position that the grass is in fact the favored mode of wiping. Next issues, Hanitzrach Lifanos Ve'eno Nifna. Let's say you have to go to the bathroom, but you decide you're going to hold it in. So Rav Chisda Ravina, so here the Gemara presents the debate of the Amoraim. Everyone is in agreement that if you need to go to the bathroom, you should go. The Gemara elsewhere describes how by holding it in, one is in violation of Bal Tashaksu. That's simply disgusting behavior. On top of that, our Gemara over here is going to be discussing what are going to be the ramifications of doing so. So the Gemara presents two Amoraim, Rav Chisda Ravina, Chadamar Ruach Rasha Latesbo, Chadamar Ruach Zuma Latesbo. So either the ramifications are going to be bad breath or general bad body odor. Tan Kamandama Ruach Zuma Mashalatesbo. The Braisa that we're about to quote is going to support the second position, that it's going to lead to bad body odor. The Tanya, the Braisa says, Anitzrach Lenkavet Ve'ochel. A person who needs to go to the bathroom and instead of going to the bathroom decides that he's going to eat more. Domala Tavashi Siku Agabe Efro. So it's like lighting an oven, but not removing the ashes of the previous lighting. So there was already a whole bunch of ashes over there, and you decide you're going to throw the logs on top of the ashes. So that's not good because the ashes are not going to promote a good cooking, a good roasting. So over here, the analogy is pretty clear. If you need to go to the bathroom and you need to remove the waste, and meanwhile you decide you're going to eat more, so it's like lighting on top of ashes. And then the Braisa concludes, and this is why we're quoting the Braisa, what are the ramifications? Bad body odor. So this Braisa is certainly siding with the viewpoint that it results in bad body odor. And our fourth topic of today, let's say you're constipated. You need to go to the bathroom, but at the same time you can't go to the bathroom, what we describe as constipation. So the Gemara gives now four suggestions of what to do in order to deal with this constipation. Number one, Yamod V'yeshev, Yamod V'yeshev. Amar Rav Chisda, sorry, let me give proper attribution. Rav Chisda says that what you should do is you should stand and you should sit, you should stand and you should sit. And that means to say, move your body. Moving your bodies will help you move your bowels. Rav Chanan Arda, Amar Yisalek L'Stadim. Rav Chanan Arda gives similar advice, and that is, just keep going to the bathroom. Right? Rashi writes, Kishabadak Asma B'Zavizu, Yisalek L'Zavizacheres V'Yivdok. Try a bathroom in that corner, try a bathroom in another corner. Similar idea. Rav Hamanuna Amar Yimashmesh Betzor Ba'osamakom. Rav Hamanuna talks about stimulating the area in order so that you go. We had this idea yesterday in terms of something that was like a suppository, like an enema, but a little bit more old-fashioned, using some sort of stone or pebble. Rabbanan Amre Yasiach Daito. Rabbanan says, just forget about it. Now, this fourth suggestion of just forget about it, the Gemara says, I don't understand that at all. What do you mean? If you forget about it, then you're not going to go to the bathroom. And the whole issue is that you need to go to the bathroom. And what does that mean, forget about it? So he says, oh, let me clarify. What it means is forget about everything else. Meaning the reason why right now you are not going, the reason why you're constipated is because you are paying too much attention to too many other things in this world. And so what you need to do is focus. And by focusing, that means blocking out everything else. So Rav Yirmiyah now gives testimony, anecdotal evidence, that the first of the suggestions, in fact, works. He says he saw an Arab. And what he did is he got up, he sat down. And then he was flowing. He had just an excellent bowel movement. Tanur Rabban, the Gemara quotes a brisa, and this brisa is going to end our discussion about proper bathroom conduct. A person is going to be sitting at a very long meal, and a very formal meal. Rashi describes over here, ginaihu lo imisterech la'amud min asud of lifanos. It's embarrassing to have to get up in order to go to the bathroom. Okay, may I be excused? So, of course, the answer is yes, but at the same time, however, it's a long and formal meal, and so what should you do in order to prepare for the meal so that you won't need to go to the bathroom? Now, the obvious suggestion is go to the bathroom, but the Gemara over here is going to be a little bit more specific, and if this sounds familiar, it's because we did this in Brachos. The Gemara said this already over in Brachos, but obviously it's relevant to our discussion. So what you should do is you should walk 10 times, 4 amos each time. Or, alternatively, walk 4 times, 10 amos each. That will, again, you're walking, you're moving, it'll get your bowels moving. And then you will go to the bathroom. And now you're able to sit in your spot. And you know now that you will not need to use the bathroom for the duration of the meal. Adkan. That is what we're going to describe now as mila de briyasa, using the term that Gemara used at the beginning of the sugya. These are health issues, and even though it does not sound important, it is no less important than the rest of the Gemara and the rest of halacha. It is a way for us to maintain healthy lifestyles. The Torah wants us to be healthy, and yes, the Gemara itself is going to go through every details that even puts us in the bathroom. Infusing every aspect of our life with Kiddush and Tahara. Let's continue. The Mishnah is going to continue now describing items. We have one more item to discuss in this perek, and that's Cheres, earthenware. What's the minimum shear of earthenware that a person, if he were to carry it into a Rishus Rabin, he would be chayv on the malacha of Hotza'ah? So Cheres kedelitein bein pasim lechaver o div Rav Yehuda. So Rav Yehuda gives a shear for the earthenware, and that is, let's say you're stacking boards, beams, one on top of another, wooden beams. But you want airflow, you want circulation, right? For those of you who store your sukkah material outside, and I'm talking about me, and then you stack the beams one on top of another directly in the hot, humid weather here in South Florida. So you know what's going to happen is that the wood's going to warp. So why don't I change my behavior? Okay, now is not a good time to discuss that. Anyway, so back in the day, even nowadays as well, so if you want the wood to make sure that it maintains, so you're going to want circulation, so what you're going to do is you're going to put small bits of earthenware between the beams, and what that will do is that will allow airflow, and it won't warp. So that is the amount of earthenware that you need in order to be chayv div Rav Yehuda, that's Rav Yehuda Shita. Rabbi Meir Omer Kedei Lachtos Bosa, or Rabbi Meir says, enough to stoke a fire. So you're holding the earthenware in your hand in order to stoke the fire, and exactly how it's working, you're stoking with the earthenware, not particularly sure, but doesn't matter. That's the minimum shear. Back in the day, it was a known amount, it was a known quantity. And Rav Yossi Omer Kedei Lachtos Bosa Revias. And Rav Yossi is of the position that it's enough earthenware where it's able to hold a quarter of a log of water. Now, Rabbi Meir, who was that middle shita of Kedei Chitui Ha'or, the amount in order to stoke the coals, so he says, look, I don't have a Beferish Pasuk that speaks to this idea, but I do have a Remez, Pasuk in Yeshayahu, 30th Parak in Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu is forecasting the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash and forecasting the destruction of Yerushalayim, and he says that the destruction will be so intense that there will be nothing remaining. And the Navi says, and now we're quoting the Pasuk, Lo imatze bemachtiso, cheres lachtos eish mikud. There's not going to be any earthenware. You're not going to have even a piece of earthenware in that you're going to be able to stoke the coals. That's the kind of destruction we're looking at. So Amalei Rav Yossi, Misham Raya, Rav Yossi says, okay, that's a Pasuk and Navi, but that's not a good proof, because why don't you continue reading in that Pasuk and the Navi? And that is Valach Sof Mai Migava, in that very same Pasuk. So the Navi says, you're not going to find earthenware not to stoke the coals and not to draw water. So in that very pasuk, the Navi is telling everybody that there's not going to be any earthen we're left in Yerushalayim, not for stoking the coals and not for drawing the water. So Rav Yossi says, you just use that pasuk to support your position. You read on in the pasuk, and that pasuk supports my position. Okay, so and we don't get more of the back and forth between Rameir and Rav Yossi. What would Rameir say to counteract that position? Okay. In the meantime, however, of the three shirim that we just described, so I think it's fair to say that the smallest of the shirim is Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says just enough earthenware so that when you're stacking wooden beams one on top of another, so you're going to get airflow between them. So he's talking about chips of earthenware. So I think it's fair to say that Rabbi Yehuda's shear is the smallest of shirim. But then we have Rabbi Meir, and then we have Rabbi Yossi. Between the two, which one is bigger? So the Gemara starts that discussion. We are going to skip the parentheses. Mistabra shira de Rabbi Yossi nafish. Certainly sounds like Rabbi Yossi's shear is bigger. Meaning, if I were to ask you, earthenware to stoke a coal, or earthenware in order to hold a revius of a liquid, it sounds like the latter is a larger size. And the Gemara says, push comes to shove, mistabra, if we just reasoned it out, it sounds like the shear of Rabbi Yossi is a larger shear. However, let's go back to that pasuk in Yeshayahu. Umikra shira de Rabbi Meir nafish. Now, when you read that pasuk and you just follow the logic of that pasuk, it certainly sounds like Rabbi Meir's shir is going to be a larger shir. Let's review the pasuk. The pasuk says Yeshayahu is telling about the impending destruction of Yerushalayim. There's not going to be any earthenware, not for stoking a coal, not even for holding water. Now, when talking about the impending disaster, so obviously, in a logical flow, what's the construct? The construct is you're not going to find a larger piece. You're not even going to find a smaller piece, right? That's what the Navi is telling the people. And the Gemara now makes exactly this point. Meaning, it's certainly not the way where a person who is forecasting destruction will say, you know, you're not going to find a small thing. You're not even going to find a large thing. That doesn't make any sense. Meaning, what the Navi is saying is, you're not going to find a large kli. You're not even going to find a small kli. That is giving more shock value to the people, where hopefully they're going to do tshuva. And parenthetically, as we all know, didn't happen. But that's certainly the way to read the pasuk. So, what we have over here is a conflict between what seems reasonable versus the way the Navi says it. What seems reasonable is that the shear of Rabbi Meir is smaller than that of Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi is talking about enough earthenware to hold a revius. Sounds like it's bigger. On the other hand, as we just read the pasuk, the Navi is forecasting destruction. You're not going to find something to light coals with. You're not even going to find something to hold to draw water from the river. Meaning, it holds a revius, and the Navi makes it sound like the latter is a smaller shear. Amar Abai Masisa Nami Lachtos Eish Mikita Gedola. So Abai says that our Mishnah is talking about the kind of earthenware where it's there to stoke a very large fire. So specific to our Mishnah, we're talking about a larger shear. But the Navi's talking about using an earthenware piece in order to stoke a smaller fire. Okay. And that's how we'll just simply resolve the difference between the Mishnah and the Pasuk. Rav Yossi Amar Mishamraya Shapir Kamalei Rav Yossi Rav Meir. So over here, Rav Yossi got the last word in the Mishnah. And not only did he get the last word in the Mishnah, but he's making a lot of sense. How can you use that Navi, the Pasuk in Yeshayahu, as a proof for your position? That what do you do with earthenware? You stoke coals with the earthenware. The Navi also goes on to say, and you draw water. Rabbi Meir, and now what would Rabbi Meir's response be? Now we don't get it in the Mishnah, but the Gemara wants to know. Because Rav Meir is familiar with the end of the pasuk. Rav Meir didn't just look at the beginning of the pasuk and says, aha, that's proof for me. Of course he knew the pasuk from beginning to end. And what he would respond is, lomi bai kama lomi bai mi dechashiv linshi delo lishtak echlei. Look, you're not going to find anything which is generally useful to people. Meaning, generally, what do people do with shards of earthenware? They stoke the fire. And that has general utility. And you're not going to find that. You're going to find things that aren't even serviceable. Meaning, can you take a piece of earthenware and collect it from the water? You could, but people typically don't. But you're not even going to find that. That's what the Navi's saying. But in terms of what is a davar chashuv and what has generally more utility, So that is the earthenware stoking the coals, not the one drawing the water from the river. So that would, that's what Rav Meir would say to Rav Yossi. So there is a defense of Rabbi Meir. And that is the end of our sugya regarding Cheres, Hajjon Lachamos Yain, and that is the end of the eighth parak. And now let's begin. We're going to begin now the ninth parak of our Masechta. And the ninth parak of the Masechta is going to be interesting because it's going to take a little break from Hilchos Shabbos. Let me say it a little stronger. More than a little break from Hilchos Shabbos. One of the highlights coming up in this parak, in the ninth parak, as we turn our attention away from Hilchos Shabbos, is Daf Peches. Daf Peches. So that is the Gemara that talks about Mamad Har Sinai, Kaf Aleim Har Kegigas. The mountain was held over them. Certainly relevant to our time as we are approaching Erev Shavuos. So certainly, although to be fair, right, I looked at the calendar, Peches is going to be said after the Yontif. But okay, but still, in the ballpark, as they say. Okay, the ninth parak is going to be going through an assortment of different topics unrelated to Shabbos. The obvious question, what are we doing here in the ninth parak going off on a tangent? Now, Gemara's go off on the tangent, and I would say frequently. But there is connective tissue, even when the Gemara goes off on a tangent. Either it's the same Baal Memra who said it, and therefore said it, the Gemara wants to quote other things that he said. So for the Gemara to go off on a tangent is somewhat more common, and there is some connective tissue. However, as we're about to start this morning, a discussion of Tumah Tahara as it relates to Avodah Zarah, which has nothing to do with the previous topic, nothing to do with Hilchos Shabbos. So how are we segueing from the 8th parak to the 9th parak? So Rashi over here writes, it's because of where we're going to end. Meaning we are going to go through a series of Mishnayos having nothing to do with Hilchos Shabbos. But eventually, when we do get to the conclusion of the parak, so we will come back a little bit to Hilchos Shabbos. And we're going to be discussing the mitzvah of Mila, and now, I don't really mean it's not the end of the parak, but in other words, in these series of Mishnayos that we're going to bring down, so we are going to quote a halacha regarding Mila, and that is obviously specific to Shabbos because the mitzvah of Mila is Doche Es HaShabbos, and that will be the connection between our series of Mishnayos and the topic of Shabbos in whole. Even though, by the way, that's coming up on Daf Pei Vav. Okay, so that is four blot from now. Okay, so says Rashi, that's a connection because eventually we will come around to discussing Milan Shabbos. Tosus, you can see the top Tosus over here. He says the connection actually is not that at all. In fact, if that were the connection, so then this mission that we should be reading is about Milan Shabbos, and then you can go off on other topics as well. The reason, says Tosus, that this Mishnah coming up, And in the next four Dapim, the next series of Mishnayos that are coming up, the reason why it's brought down over here is it because it follows the same construct as the last Mishnah of the 8th Perek. Right? Take a look just a couple lines up in the Gemara, the last Mishnah in the 8th Perek. How much Cheres would a person need to carry on Shabbos in order to be Chayev? So the Torah never addresses this point blank. However, there is a remez in the Navi, specifically in the 30th Perek of Yeshayahu. So we have a halacha, and the halacha is supported by a pasuk in Navi. So from that point going forward, says Tosos, here's what we're going to do. We're going to be following this construct of, here's a halacha, and then it is supportable by a pasuk. Now the reason why we are starting over here in the topic of Avodah Zarah, as we're going to see in just a moment, we're talking about Avodah Zarah, is because the pasuk that's being cited as a support for the halacha comes from that very same parak in Yeshayahu. And so that's why we are segueing from the last Mishnah of the 8th parak to the first Mishnah coming up here in the 9th parak. And that's what all the Mishnayos for the next four blot are going to look like. A halacha, and then a support for the halacha based on a pasuk in the Navi. Right? You could take a look ahead. Tomorrow's daf, pasuk for Mishle. Take a look at Pei Dalman Beis, the pasuk in Yeshayahu. Okay, we all get the point. Okay, that says Tosos is the way that the Mishnayos are now going to go off on a bit of a tangent. And now, that's a general introduction to the ninth parak. And now let's give a specific introduction to our first Mishnah over here. We talk about Avodah Zarah. When something is established to be Avodah Zarah, it was worshipped as an alternative entity, as an alternative deity, a false deity. So then the item itself has a status as known as Avodah Zarah. And what do we know regarding Avodah Zarah? It is Asur Behana. One is not allowed to get benefit from Avodah Zarah, and it has to be destroyed on top of that. So, and there's a series of other halachas all discussed in Masechta Avodah Zarah, in the five prakim of Avodah Zarah. In the meantime, however, what we're going to be learning is the following. Between today and tomorrow, we're going to be introducing ourselves to the idea of Tumah by Avodah Zarah. Once something has the status of Avodah Zarah, it's going to be subject to Tumah. And what we're going to be discussing is a detail within this, and that is what degree of Tumah does Avodah Zarah have. Now, to give away the Gemara's conclusion, which we're going to see in tomorrow's daf, and that is that this Tumah is Midrabanan. The Torah does not give a Tumah status to Avodah Zarah. The Torah just simply says it is Asur Behana. It's the Chachamim who slapped a Tumah on the Avodah Zarah. Why would they do that? So we've seen this idea time and again, and we are going to reintroduce ourselves to this idea, and that is that back in the day, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, people really cared about the Tumah Tahara. We unfortunately are living on the other side of that spectrum, because Tumah Tahara has very little relevance to us in our daily halachic life, so therefore we're just not attuned to Tumah Tahara. But back in the day, they were extraordinarily sensitive to Tumah Tahara. Let's remind each other that if you're in a state of Tumah, you are not allowed entrance into the Beis HaMikdash. You can't go into the Harabayis. Certain levels of Tumah, you have to excuse yourself from the city of Yerushalayim. So it really impaired your religious lifestyle. And needless to say, if you're in a state of Tumah, you can't offer karbanos if you are in need to offer karban. And annually, there are three times in the year annually where you have to offer karban. So back in the day, Tumah Tahara was very serious. And the Chachamim realized that. And the Chachamim, basically, if they wanted to keep people away from something, so they will give it the status of Tumah. And in doing so, it'll reinforce the idea that you should have nothing to do with this item. And so that's why the Chachamim would slap a Din Tumah on the item. Okay, that is all by way of general introduction. And now the details. And the details over here are, when the Chachamim slapped Tumah on Avodah Zarah, what degree of Tumah did they give it? Now, within the world of Tumah, there are a lot of options, which we're going to be discussing over the remainder of today's daf and tomorrow's daf as well. This topic concludes with tomorrow's daf. The Gemara will be spending a daf and a half on this. And so, let us start with the Mishnah. Amar Rabbi Akiva Minayin LaAvodah Zarah Shematameh B'Masa. So, Avodah Zarah is going to give off Tumah, and to what degree? Tumas Masa. Tumas Masa Kinida. And that means as follows. It means that we know that when it comes to Anida, Anida is Tame both, Bemagav Amasa. You were to touch a woman who is menstruating, or even if she concluded, but has not gone to the mikvah, she now has the status of being Tame, and that is communicated in one of two ways, either Maga, physical contact, or Masa, or carrying her. Either of those would transmit the Tumah over to you, you now become a Tolada. You become a recipient of that Tumah, you're a Rishon. Okay. The Nida herself is an Avatumah. And what Rabbi Kiva is of the opinion is that the Tumah that's slapped on by the Chachamim to Avodah Zarah is going to be equivalent to this level of Tumah. In that if you were to either touch the Avodah Zarah or carry the Avodah Zarah, so it will transmit Tumah over to you, albeit rabbinically, but still will transmit Tumah. Shenamar, now how do I know this? So we have a Pasuk in Yeshayahu. So the Pasuk in Yeshayahu alludes to this. Now this is a din derabanan, but it could easily be understood that the Chachamim were sensitive to this pasuk in Yeshayahu, more than sensitive, meaning they knew it, obviously, but it gave them the understanding, the guidelines in which, if we're going to slap a Tumah, what degree of Tumah should we do so? So they use the pasuk in Yeshayahu as a platform in terms of establishing the level of Tumah. The pasuk says, Tzareim kemo dava, tzei Tumah lo. So the Pasuk in Yeshayahu over here is describing what our attitude should be to Avodah Zarah. We should tizdarim, we should make it foreign to us. The Gemara actually is going to give us good pshat in the Pasuk a little bit later on. And say Tomar Lo, and you should say to it, go out. you need not be part of my life. Ma nida mitame b'masa af avodazar mitame b'masa. Just like nida gives off tumas maga and masa, so to avodazar is going to give off tumas maga and masa. Now this is the shita of Rabbi Akiva, as is clear in the first words of this perek, the first words of this mishnah, and already you get the impression that not everyone is in agreement with Rabbi Akiva. If everyone was in agreement with Rabbi Akiva, it probably would have been an anonymous mishnah. That is good intuition, and it happens to be correct. Tanan Hasa. We're going to learn a mishnah in Avodah Zarah. Mishaya Beis HaSamach LaAvodah Zarah. Let's say your house was contiguous with another person's house. It was a duplex, and it happens to be that that other person's house was a base of Avodah Zarah. Now, base of Avodah Zarah could mean one of two things. Either it means that there was Avodah Zarah worship in the house, or what it could also mean is that the house itself was subject to being worshipped. Okay, which, by the way, carries with it a series of halachas, which we're not going to go into right now. Can you make something connected to the ground a status of Avodah Zarah? Okay. It's a bit of an issue, but right now we're just going to go through the simple reading of this Mishnah in Avodah Zarah. And now what happens is that your house collapses. Now you're going to obviously want to rebuild your house, but in doing so, you're also, because you're sharing a wall with the Avodah Zarah house, you're going to be building a wall for the Avodah Zarah itself. Now you're not allowed to do that. So what do you do? Also, if no, so Kesed Yasa, so what do you do? Konis L'soch Shalot Dala Amos Abona. So what you're going to have to do now is, there's obviously a property line, and you're going to have to recess within your property line for Amos, build the wall there. You're obviously going to be losing four Amos of your house that you had previously. Okay? How was the wall built at the first in the first place? Again, good points, but we are just going to be focusing on the basic Mishnah. So you're going to have to recess now into your property for Amos, build the wall there. What are you going to be doing with that dead space, so to say? The Gemara in Avodah Zarah discusses it. Not a topic for now. Ubonem, and that is how you're going to be building the wall anew. As we now are on the top of the Amud Beis, Hayah Shelo V'Shelo Avodah Zarah. Now let's say that the shared wall, in terms of where the border of the two properties are, exists right in the middle of, right in the center of that wall. So then Nido Mechza Mechza Avana Ve'etza V'Afar Mitamim, sorry, Nido Mechza Mechza. So in terms of recessing, so the area in which you're going to take your tape measure to measure the Dal Amos is from the midpoint of the wall. Okay. Now, that's the first part of the Mishnah, and that's not why we're quoting the Mishnah. We're quoting the Mishnah for this next segment of the Mishnah. Avanav ve'etzav ve'afarav mitamim kisheretz. The Mishnah there says that as far as the stones and the wood and the dirt that came down, that was belonging to the Avodah Zarah, so it's going to be metame. It's going to be metame like a sheretz. Shenemer shaketsa tishaketsanu. The Torah, when telling us about our attitude to the Avodah Zarah, the Torah says that we should detest the Avodah Zarah. But using the word sheketz as a description of how our attitude should be, obviously he's equating it to a shkatzin. One of the sources of tumah in the Torah is shkatzin, is a sheketz. Now, the truth of the matter is only eight of them are going to give off tumah, and only after they're dead, but still, certain shkatzim are going to give off tumah, and that should be the way that we feel towards the Avodah Zarah. And what the Chachamim are saying is, by virtue of the fact that the Torah itself equates it to shkatzim, it's telling us that what degree of tumah are we talking about? It's going to give off tumah just like a sheketz, which is only mitame b'maga, and not b'masa. Now, in that Mishnah, Rabbi Kiva Omer Kenida, Shenemar Tezarein Kmo Dava, Manida mitame b'masa, Afav Rezar, mitame b'masa. And in that Mishnah presents the Shita of Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva says that the Avodah Zarah is going to give off tumah like a nida, both maga, physical contact, masa, and also by carrying the Avodah Zarah, one is going to contract the tumah. So here we have in this Mishnah of Avodah Zarah the debate of the Chachamim and Rabbi Kiva. Our Mishnah here in Shabbos only brings in the position of Rabbi Kiva. Again, why would our Mishnah do that? So going back to what we said at the beginning of our perek, it actually makes perfect sense. Because the reason why we're stringing the next series of Mishnahs together is because of the construct of here's a halacha and here's a remez to it in the Navi, which is what you get from Rabbi Kiva. The Chachamim, actually, interesting, the Chachamim also have a remez, not from the Navi, they have it from the Torah itself. Okay, you could make the argument that the remez from the Torah is stronger than the remez from the Navi. Okay, but anyway, so we have the machlokes between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim in terms of the degree of Tumah that will be given to an Avodah Zarah. And again, I just want to remind all of us that this Tumah is Tumah Derabbanan. The Gemara will say so tomorrow is Daf, very clearly. And so even though we're quoting Psukim, the Psukim are only acting as Ramazim. They are only allusions to the Tumah, but they're not the source of the Tumah. It's not a Tumah Daraisa, it is a Tumah Derabbanan. Now over here, what we have is a debate, but the truth of the matter is that we also have competing Psukim, meaning the Chachamim cite the Pasuk in the beginning of Sefer Devarim, which compares the Avodah Zarah to Sheketz, and Rabbi Kiva has a pasuk in Yeshayahu comparing it to an Ida. So the truth of the matter is that we really have competing pesukim, and then what we're going to have to explain is what is each Tana going to do with the other pasuk. That's coming up in just a moment. Amar Rava. So before we get involved in the machloket between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim, let's just take a moment to now give good shot in the pasuk. Rava Dasa. Tizareim d'amakra nachrinu minach kezar. The word tizareim, now probably in the English translation in the Navi, I didn't look it up, but probably tizareim means cast it off, spread, send it away. But Rabbi says the word tizareim comes from the root being zar, estranged, meaning you should make yourself estranged to the avodah zarah. Say tomar lo, that's the end of the pasuk. Hikanes al tomar lo. And don't invite it into your house. Basically, as if you're talking to it, saying, right, get out of my house. You're not invited here. You're not welcomed here. That should be our general attitude towards Avodah Zarah. Okay, now with all that stated, so now we're going to get involved. Because here we have a debate between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim in terms of the degree of Tumah that's by Avodah Zarah. And now we're going to have a subsequent Machlokas Amarayim in terms of what exactly is or are the parameters of the Machlokas between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim. So this Gemara over here is going to be a little bit complicated, as we're going to have a Machlokas. We already have a Machlokas. And within that, we're going to have a Machlokas Amarayim, how to understand the Machlokas tonight. So today, let's start with Rabba. Amar Rabba b'masa dekul amalo pligi demetame. As far as Tumas Masa is concerned, we do not have a debate. That everyone's going to be in agreement that the Avodah Zarah is going to be metame b'masa. Da'ayit kishli nida, because you have the Pasuk in Yeshayahu comparing it to anida. Okay, so ki pligi be'eva mesama. The only debate between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim is going to be a Tumah known as Evan Mesama. Now, if you're unfamiliar, it is excusable. The Gemara brings it up not that often. However, to be fair, we just did this back in Masechta Nida. Evan Mesama is a type of transmission of Tumah specific to Nida. In terms of what does it mean, we're going to go with Rashi's Pshat over here. Rashi's Pshat over here is argued with Tosos throughout Shas. It happens to be that Tosos right over here argues with Rashi as well. But to streamline the Gemara, we're just going to present Rashi. Rashi writes Evan Mesama. I'm going to read the Rashi inside. Evan Shesamu al Gabi Yesedo. So the stone is placed on top of pegs. V'kelim tachteha. Now you have clothing underneath the stone. Kidichsiv. V'aisis Evan Chadav Esamta al Pum Guva. Rashi quotes the Pasuk in Daniel, just speaking to the idea that this stone is in Aramaic is referred to as a Sama or Samta. Venido zav yoshin ala. Now what you have is either anida or izav sitting on top of the stone. Now afa pishalo hichbidu ala kelim. Now they're not putting any of their weight on the clothing because the stone is being supported by pillars, and so the anida or the zav is on top of the clothing, but not actually putting his weight on the clothing. Nevertheless, tameim akelim dichsiv kol asher yetachtav. Nevertheless, the clothing that's underneath the stone is going to be Tameh, because the Pasuk, when describing the Tumah of a Zav and of a Nida, it says, Kol Asher Yetachtav, anything that's underneath. And so, from a preposition standpoint, the clothing is underneath, and so therefore it's going to be Tameh. So this is not Medrash, this is a specific Tumah known as Evan HaMesam. That's Rashi's understanding. And as we're going to see, this is only specific to a Nida. It does not apply to any other Tumah. It doesn't apply to Shratzim. It doesn't apply to Tumas Mace. It only applies to Nida. And so the issue over here, now going back to our Gemara, is whether or not the Tumah that's slapped on the Avodah Zarah by the Chachamim is going to have it with the Tumah of Eved Mesamah. Ki pligib Eved Mesamah. Rabbi Akiva Savar ki Nida. I'm back in the Gemara. Rabbi Akiva says just like Nida, Ma Nida Matam of Eved Mesamah, Af Avodah Zarah Matam of Eved Mesamah. Rabbi Akiva is of the position that the comparison between Nida and Avodah Zarah is a complete comparison. And whatever Tumah exists by Nida is going to be transitioned over to Avodah Zarah. And the Chachamim say no. In other words, the Avodah Zarah is somewhat like Nida, but not totally like Nida. How do I know that? Because the Torah compares it to Shratzim. And just like a Sheretz is not Metame Be'evim Mesama, neither is the Avodah Zarah. So now, according to Rabbi Akiva, if the comparison between Avodah Zarah and Nida is a complete comparison, what is he going to do with the pasuk in Chumash where the Torah there compares it to a sheretz? So the Gemara's answer is l'misham sheha. We're talking about that which services the Avodah Zarah. That's called Tashmishe Avodah Zarah. Anything which services the Avodah Zarah is not going to be Matame, not Masa, not Eved Mesama. It's only going to be Matame, Tumas Sheretz. Uli Rabbanan l'mayuch sa'ikish l'nida. Now, as far as the Chachamim are concerned, why is the Torah comparing it to a Nidah L'masa? Because, because this is the position of Rabbah. Rabbah is of the opinion that when it comes to Avodah Zarah being Metameh B'masa, everybody agrees that's Metameh B'masa. And as far as Rabbi Akiva is concerned, that's clear because he believes that the comparison is a complete comparison. Even according to the Chachamim, it's a partial comparison to get us to this point that Avodah Zarah is Metameh B'masa. So the Gemara says, wait one second. So according to the Chachamim, where do we want to land? What's the conclusion? That Avodah Zarah is Metame B'maga U'B'masa, but not Eved Mesama. So the Gemara says, if that's where you wanted to get to, what should the Torah have compared it to? Should have compared it to Nevela. V'luk Shavrachman ala Nevela. Why didn't the Torah compare it to Nevela? And as Rashi explains over here, it would have been much more expedient, much more streamlined. Because consider where we are now in the position of the Chachamim. What's Avodah Zarah? It's Metame B'maga, it's Metame B'masa, but it's not Metame B'Eved Mesama. How do we get there? Well, the Torah compares it to Anida, bringing us to Magad Masa, but doesn't want to include Eved Mesama, therefore compares it to a Sheretz to exclude Eved Mesama. Okay, that's a little bit complicated. Why doesn't the Torah or the Navi just simply say, hey, you know what Avodah Zarah is like? Avodah Zarah is like Nevela. Okay, good. And in that way now, it would have been a clear communication that the Tumah that should be on Avodah Zarah should be Metame B'Maga B'Masa, just like it's so by Nevela. And Achinam, the Gemara concedes the point. The Gemara says it's a very good point. Elamanida ein le'ivarim, af Avodah Zarah ein le'ivarim. But we do, however, want to introduce another halacha, and that is that, you know, by Nida, there is no Tumah for Eivarim for limbs. What does that mean? Rashi explains. Rachmanis, let's say, a woman's Anida and one of the limbs comes detached from her body. So this is what is called Aver Menachai. Not Aver Menachai from a consumption standpoint, but Aver Menachai meaning that now this limb has come off of her, and obviously now this limb is lifeless, so the limb now is going to be a source of Tumah. What kind of Tumah is it going to transmit? Tumas Mace. It will transmit Tumas Mace, however, it's not going to transmit Tumas Nida. And everyone here is wondering, well, if it's transmitting Tumas Mace, doesn't that cover everything? Tumas Mace is Metame, Be, Maga, Uve, Masa, Uve, Ohel. And so isn't that cover everything that Nida covers? And although you're right, but not totally. Because what does Nida, what kind of Tumah does Nida communicate specifically in Nida? We just saw the answer in today's daf. And that is the Tumah of Eved Mesama. That is unique and specific to Nida. So when a limb comes off of a Nida, so although it is going to be Tumas Mace, but it's not going to be Metama with the Tumah of Eved Mesama. That is what we learn. That is what we learn regarding the Nida. And what the Gemara now is saying is the same thing is true regarding Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah is not going to be Metame Be'evarim. That if I have a limb, now Avodah Zarah obviously an inanimate object. But that means to say that if a piece of the Avodah Zarah comes off, it's not going to be metame, just like the Tumas Nida goes away once the limb is detached from the woman. So the Gemara says, yeah, but what about the question of Rav Chama Bar Guria, which we're going to explore in more detail in tomorrow's daf, where he asked this very question. By the Tumah of Avodah Zarah, if, let's say, a segment comes off the Avodah Zarah, is it subject to Tumah or is it not? That was his question. Tishulei Meha. So, Dil Rabbanan Eina Le'Evarim. So the Gemara says, so why don't we now say that what we just learned together is that it's not metame be'evarim? That's exactly why the Torah gives us this balanced approach of comparing it to both sheretz and to nida. It's doing so in order to tell us that it's not subject to tumas evarim. So Rav Chama Bar Guria libid Rabbi Kiva ba'ila. So the Gemara says Rav Chama Bar Guria was not asking within the shita of the Chachamim. He was asking his question within the shita of Rabbi Kiva, because again, remember, according to Rabbi Kiva, the comparison between a nida and a avodah zarah is a complete comparison. And once we say it's a complete comparison, are we prepared to say that it goes all the way to its conclusion, that just like by a nida, it's not metameh be'evarim, are we ready to say the same thing regarding a avodah zarah as well? That was Rav Chama Bar Guria's question. It only works within the shita of Rabbi Kiva. It doesn't work within the shita of the Chachamim. And so therefore, according to the Chachamim, we know for sure that it's not going to be metameh be'evarim. Okay, this will be a good stopping point. And the other side, Rav Elazar, we're going to do tomorrow. Let us quickly recap. The first part of today's daf is very easy to recap, as we started off concluding our discussion of proper conduct within the bathroom, issues associated with bowel movements and proper hygiene in terms of promoting better health. The Gemara describes it as mila de briyasa, things that keep us healthy. It is important. And so the Gemara opened up over here that covered a good part of the Amud Aleph. The second Mishnah that we did today, the concluding Mishnah of the 8th Parak, talked about the shear for Cheres, three opinions in the Mishnah in terms of what is the shear by Cheres, and the fact that one of the positions, actually two of the positions, is supported by a pasuk in Sefer Yeshayahu. And then the back and forth in terms of how does each Tana understand the pasuk in Yeshayahu. And then we opened up this morning with the ninth parak of the Masech. The ninth parak of the Masech takes us now on a detour, as we're going to be going through other halachas. The connection, so we're going to say like Tosfos. And that is that it's a halacha, and then an allusion or supported by a pasuk in Navi. So over here, the first Mishnah talking about Tuma by Avodah Zarah. So the halacha is that Tumah now is going to be an Av HaTumah, albeit Midrabanan. And the reason why the Chachamim did that is so that people would stay further away from the Avodah Zarah. What degree of Tumah? Machlokes between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim. Rabbi Kiva's position is that it's going to be like a Nida, being Mitame both Bemaga uveMasa, both by contact and by carrying. And as we learned, the Gemara brings down a Machlokes between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim. Whether it's metame b'mago, that's according to the Chachamim, or metame b'mago v'masa, that's the shita of Rabbi Kiva. The fact that we support the Chachamim is based on the pasuk in the beginning of Sefer Dvarim, shakesh t'shaketzen, where the Torah clearly is telling us to treat the Avodah Zarah like shratzim, just like a shratzim. Metame b'mago, so too is the Avodah Zarah. Rabbi Kiva has the pasuk in Yeshayahu comparing the Avodah Zarah to a nida, to zarin k'mo dava. And so now that's a machlokas hatanayim, and within that a machlokas amarayim. Where do we stand right now? We just went over one amora's viewpoint, that of Rava. Rava's of the position that everyone agrees that Avodah Zarah is metame b'maga uve'masa, both Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim. And now within the Shita, where is the point of debate? The point of debate, according to Rava, is whether or not the Tumah specific to Nida, known as Evan Misama, whether that also translates over to to the Avodah Zarah. Rabbi Kiva says yes, because he believes the comparison is a full comparison, and the Chachamim say no, Evan Misama does not translate over to Avodah Zarah. That is our first view of the Machlokes between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim. Tomorrow, we start with Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar is going to give a different viewpoint of how he understands the Machlokes between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim, and Rabbi Elazar's position will be defended over the course of tomorrow's daf. Adkan.